Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Manchester's indie rock and roll station. XS Manchester. The XS Manchester Long Player. An iconic album in full with Jim Salverson. XS Manchester.
Hey there, welcome to the XS Long Player. I'm Jim Salverson, and this is where I get to discuss classic Indian rock albums with the people that made them. Thank you for clicking play on this particular episode in which I'm going to discuss Blossom's eponymous debut album. I love the word eponymous. I had no idea what it meant till about 6 months ago. If you're in that boat, it means album named after the band, essentially. For this podcast, I was expecting just to speak to Tom Ogden, frontman of Blossoms, but when I clicked the join Zoom meeting button, I was suddenly met with the entire band. So this is a brilliant chat with Tom and Charlie and Josh and Joe and Miles about the album that kicked it all off for Blossoms. Because the whole band are there, it does get a little bit excitable, a little bit messy at times, but you know what? It was brilliant to chat to a band that just seemed like a great bunch of mates, seemed to absolutely love what they do, and remember their time making and creating this debut album really fondly, it seems. Just to give you a bit of background on this album, in case you can't remember, it was released in 2016, produced by James Skelly from The Coral and Rich Turvey, boomed into the charts at number one, and was crowned Enemy's Album of the Year in its year of release in 2016 as well. In other words, it's a good one. I hope you enjoy this chat with the boys. I did. I think they did too. And if you want to get more from this series, there are loads of albums already in the back catalogue of the XS Long Player. Brilliant albums discussed with the people that made them. Go and have a listen back. If you liked today's episode, do give it a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever it is you listen to your podcasts. Let the world know what you think, because it helps people discover this show. Enjoy the pod. Cheers to your ears. I'll see you at the other side of this conversation with Blossoms about Blossoms, their debut album. Oh yeah, and spot the bit at the beginning where I start the interview by getting the release date wrong. That's fun. Enjoy. How you doing, boys?
All right, mate. Yeah, how are you? It's all good.
Yeah, I'm really good, Tar. I want to start at the obvious place, I guess, because I think in terms of the albums we've done so far on the Long Player, this is probably one of the more recent ones, 7 years old now. For many of us, I think it feels like a pretty recent album. But for you guys, does it feel like an age ago?
It's not seven yet, mate. Don't wish our lives away.
How old is it now? I worked out at seven, but my maths is terrible.
5 in August.
Okay, 5. All right. But still, I mean, 5 years, that must feel like... I mean, does it feel like a long time? Does it feel like yesterday?
Yeah, it does feel like a long time ago, I think, now, because we've been quite prolific, haven't we? So we've had, like, 2 other albums out in the meet since then. We've released 3 albums, and then obviously we've started recording a 4th, so it's a bit... We don't tend to look back very often, I don't think. So, yeah, it does feel like a while ago.
Some things feel... a long time ago, some things don't. Like the recording of it. You know, we're going past you, it's like, it didn't feel that long since we were in here first time as well.
To me, it feels a while ago, that.
Does it? Mm. I mean, what? More like 70 now, so.
I love how there's 4 of you and I got 4 completely different answers there in terms of how long ago it felt as an album. Take me back to the writing of this album then. Where were the first notes scribbled down? Where were those lyrics written? Where were the first riffs conceived?
First song was written... at home. I was written in my mum and dad's room, weirdly enough. Never ever writing there.
Isn't that the only time you've written?
Yeah. I remember sat on the end of the bed on an acoustic. I was listening to a lot of The Doors on that song, and I just tried to write a song that sounded like The Doors, and kind of does a little bit when you strip it back.
That was the first tune, because we were like a 4-piece, weren't we?
It's old, that. It was like, we jammed that before we were like even doing any gigs, really.
Yeah, and we got Miles in, and that was the first like time where I was like, Miles really fits in this band.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because obviously when you get someone down to play keys, we just thought it was going to be like...
padding out the sound.
Yeah, we didn't really want it to be like a lead instrument, obviously. No, do you know what I mean? Like, the keyboards are very like...
at the forefront.
Yeah. And then Miles like proper stepped up, didn't he?
It was like his kind of audition, and then what he brought to the table on that tune kind of sealed the deal for him being in the band, I suppose. But yeah, that was the earliest song written for the album, was Blow.
He'd say Peter, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
When you were writing that album... when you were writing that song, I should say, what were you writing it for in your head? Were you already at the stages where you're thinking about an album? Was it EPs? Was it just writing for the sake of writing? Was it writing for fun? How was it looking at that stage?
Just writing for fun, really. And obviously, we'd started the band, so I knew it was going to be for Blossoms. So I kind of had it, you know, we'd already kind of, we'd had a couple of jams and kind of figured out, you know, Josh had a cool pedal board. Charlie and Joe on the drums and bass were obviously sounding boss already. And then me and Charlie on the harmony. So you could kind of hear the workings of what it would sound like. But Fit Blow was the first, it's the oldest tune, it's still the longest standing, but like, we still play it live all the time. So it was the first one where everyone kind of brought something to the table, and I think we realised, oh, we could probably do something with it, was that song, and that's why we ended up, it was our first single, and then we kept it on the album still as well, because we just felt like it summed us up in the early days.
What were you listening to at that point? Because I think one of the things that stood out for me about this album when it was released, and the EPs that came before as well to a certain extent, was it sounded really different to a lot of the other music that was around at the time, particularly in the indie scene. So where were those influences being pulled from at that time?
It was a lot of like just random songs by different people, like along the way. Someone would send me a song and then that would inspire me to write another song. And then some songs weren't even inspired by, you know, other artists or anything. Like Blown Rose, James Skelly gave me an acoustic guitar because we'd already started working with him. And then I went home and just wrote that song on that acoustic. So it was kind of like that song was hidden in the guitar, if you'd like. And then once we started working with James on Blow, obviously we were saying like the Doors and stuff on the early versions of Blow was like the organ and stuff. Once we ended up working with James Skelly, he changed the organ for like synthesizers, which then just opened a whole new world for us as a band. So then when I was writing stuff on the keyboards at home still, just like piano sounds and just little twinkly sounds, we'd then put them on synths, like Charlemagne, for example.
It isn't as glamorous. It's like it's literally as boring as didn't have the money for boss synths.
No, we didn't even know really what synths were, did we? And obviously we wanted to sound current as well. That was a big part. And I remember James being like, you know, you don't want to sound like you're from 1960, whatever. Mm-hmm. You want to still have your influences from there, wear them on your sleeve, but don't literally be a carbon copy sound of it. Because there was a whole like heavenly scene, wasn't it, at the time, I remember? Like, we were big fans of Temples.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that. And we kind of, early days, were more in that vibe and the way we dressed and the way we sounded.
What did you call us, Jack?
No one needs to know what we original genre was.
Yeah, it wasn't specific albums as such. It was just like tracks off, you know. And everything we've grown up listening to was obviously filtered into that first release, because you've kind of been soaking up all this stuff for years. You know, we said it, Arctic Monkeys, Oasis, ABBA, you know, the Beatles, all that, the Doors, that filters in just because you've listened to it so much. But I feel like we ended up creating our own sound by, obviously it sounds obvious, but like merging everything, merging all the influences and not really trying to sound just like anyone else. I remember actually the synths and some of the guitar parts and the later tunes recorded for the album, like Honey Sweet, Getaway. James Skelly was always talking about 1989 by Taylor Swift, which was like, oh, was it Ryan Adams' version of 1989? I can't remember. But he was like talking about Taylor Swift and, you know, still sounding poppy. So, you know, we had all these band influences, but then he was also adamant on getting us on the radio and stuff, which worked.
James was probably the one that pushed us out of the comfort zone, really, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Into doing that, into finding our own sort of sound, which was good.
Yeah, we just give you little nudges in little directions. Like, for example, changing the organ on Blow to a synth, then it opens a whole new thing. Like, oh, that make it sound like a synth. And then I'm listening to other music, he'd send me songs. So it was a very... just a lot of fun.
I wanted to ask you how heavy the hand was of James Skelly working on this album as the producer. I think you've kind of answered that already. It was gentle nudges in certain directions. Are there any tracks that you reflect on the album and you listen back to and go, oh yeah, I can really hear his influence in that, because that's completely changed the way that track feel to maybe how you imagined it at the beginning?
The room was like, we went a completely different way with it. And
we had it more like charlatans and like...
it was like in Spiral Carpet.
It was quite baggy at first.
Baggy and like organ, like that kind of stuff. And then James was like, you just sound like a pub band doing it like that. He was like, but the song's good. He was like, just, I was playing it in their rehearsal room, the Corals. Yeah. Like, cause I always kind of used to play it at home, like imagining we were doing like a songwriter session or like, you know, MTV Unplugged. And I was always like, oh, this is how I'd play it if we did it like that, you know, in my own head. Mm. And I showed it James, like, and he went, just do it like that. Literally, it's like a massive staple piece in like the live set and stuff now, like everyone's on shoulders, but literally he was just like, do it like that, sounds good. So
Deep Grassy had a big influence on, I think, the last track on the album, didn't it? You know, the way it was produced and the sounds.
Yeah, because we kind of built, it's like in two halves, that first album, like the first half, like Charlemagne, Monster Kiss, like Blow, Coming Out Bleed and stuff like that, Blown Rose, they were like rehearsed in a room with us lot, and then we then took it on the road for a bit, then took it to James Skelly, and then we kind of So they basically were already formed songs, like rehearsed, and they existed. Whereas, because we're on tour all the time, I used to write in between gigs at home, and we didn't have any time to go into the studio. So we used to to the rehearsal room. So then we'd go into the studio, and I'd just have the song. And then basically it was like a blank slate, and we'd take it anyway. And that's when the whole Taylor Swift kept coming up and stuff. So he'd be like, you need a song which sounds like Taylor Swift. So I'd be like, well, I've got this one called Funny Sweet. And we'd done like a little bit of a demo, me and Miles. And then, so we had like bits and bobs knocking about, but and like Getaway, we built completely from scratch. Just I had the song, and we just built it up from that. So I'd say they were the ones he had a big influence on, because he kind of helped us piece it together.
It was more of a time thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm so busy that first year.
Getaway was the song that you became like more direct with your lyrics on, wasn't it? I remember you saying.
Yeah, and Honey Sweet and Deep Grass, that was like the whole period, I think. Obviously a breakup as well.
It's really interesting that you mentioned that the album was kind of in two parts, because I was looking back at some of the reviews of the album at the time, and the one that caught my eye was a review that said, I'll try and find it and I'll read it. It says, Blossom's self-titled first effort sounds less like a debut and more like a greatest hits album from a veteran group. I think what it's getting at with that review is A, how mature and accomplished you sounded as a band in terms of songwriting and production and the way the band kind of fitted together. But I think it's also hinting at these different vibes that you have on the album, these different sounds. And obviously you'd pulled a few songs from previous EPs, you'd written them in different places. So was that a challenge when you came to think of this as an album? Was it a challenge to make it hang together as one body of work, as kind of like an album that makes sense?
It did feel a bit like a singles collection. You know, looking back, I think as we've got older and done more albums, we've kind of pieced it together a bit better, and we had more of an idea of what the album would be, whereas this was like, there was a few songs, weren't they, knocking about that didn't end up on it, like You Put a Gun on Me and On the Beach at Night. So we did have conversations
across the moor.
We had conversations. I know we had all them EP tracks, so we had loads of conversations about track listing and stuff. But again, quite efficient as a band, so once we had the main body recorded, we kind of just pieced it together. And then that's when James would take control as a producer and say, because obviously he could probably see it piecing together and be like, you need another one that's like that. And maybe you need one more single. And that was when he suggested like the Honey Sweet thing. You know, you need a song that Taylor Swift could sing.
I remember sitting in the kitchen.
Yeah, well, I showed it.
And me and Miles were like, Honey Sweet. Because you were like, you didn't think, you thought
it was too far. The demo was pure
Miles. It was like,
it's a boss, but the demo's
I love the demo, mate. He's more me. I wanted to sound like the XX, that song. Man.
Yeah.
But at the time, you know, we had songs like Blow, it was a million miles away.
A few times where it felt like Jay asked for something, but you already had it.
Yeah, because I'd be writing and
all the time.
Some sort of, like, I ain't showing anyone Getaway, I don't think, because I not didn't rate it, but this will sound mad because obviously it's a big tune now, but I wrote it so fast and just thought, it's all right. Like, I genuinely thought that was too easy. Like, it can't be that good because it was that easy to write.
Have you always been like that, Tom? Because obviously in the last few years, as you mentioned earlier, you've been pretty prolific in terms of what you've produced as a band. But I think a lot of bands going into their first album have this body of work because they've spent their entire lives till that point, leading up to that point. But did you have like hundreds of songs to pick from then in that case, if you could just pluck these tunes out of the air when you were asked for them?
We did have a lot of songs, yeah.
Tom's fucking strict on himself. What's mad, I think, is like, there's some songs where Tom's like, even what he said about Getaway then, like, I think he's got tunes that he's never showed us that are like mint tunes. Do you know what I mean? Probably is it. But he's pretty strict on himself in terms of what I'm getting from it. Do you know what I mean? Like, Jay will say something and we're like, oh, I don't have anything. Tom's like, well, I've got this, and just start doing something. He's like, where the fuck have you pulled that from? Like, why you told us about this? So like, why? Do you know what I mean? There's like loads of stuff where it's like, so I think you're right all the time. You do, but I think you've got like a bit of, not quality control, because obviously
sometimes it is like that.
Yeah, but sometimes that goes wrong, so maybe not the most efficient quality control.
I have to really like it to show someone. So I liked it enough to show it, but I weren't like, because we were busy, I kind of just obviously wrote it and just left it. I am, touch wood, quite prolific. Obviously, I think then I was writing a lot, because I was coming out of relationships, so the songs were just kind of falling out left, right and centre. So, yeah, there was a lot of songs knocking about.
You've always liked to work fast as well, haven't you?
Yeah. And that's why we ended up writing new ones for the album, because we could have just put loads of the tunes off the EPs on there, like Across the Moor and Polka Dot Bones, and done a first album like that, but because I was already writing these new songs and we thought they were better, it was like, these should just be the first album. And they were fresher, do you know what I mean? They'd been written.
By the time the album came out, there was already a real buzz around you guys as a band. You were on a load of ones to watch lists. I think you'd been heralded as the saviours of indie many times, particularly in Manchester, I think. Were you feeling the pressure at that point when the album was about to hit the shelves? Was there a pressure for it to be successful?
For me, no. Because we were so busy that year, I genuinely don't feel like, personally, I didn't really have time to just sit back and overthink it and reflect. I think it, as we got successful, that's when I felt it more. Once we had the success of the first album, because in my head, I was like, we will need a second one.
Comparative, isn't it?
But the first one was just... was so much fun. Like, I didn't feel no pressure, really. Looking back, it was just like gigs all the time. And we obviously we knew we had good pre-orders, and it was like, well, you might get number one. Then the week of it, it was like, looks like you're going to be number one. It was like, amazing. And we flew to like Romania the day after. So it was kind of like, no time, because then you're kind of tired and you've got to pack a bag, then you've got to get to the hotel. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't like, we didn't really have like a big party, did we? It was just like a big year of a party, I suppose.
Yeah, it was
best
amazing.
Year. It was so much fun.
Yeah, it was amazing. Like,
it was the perfect blend of pressure, but kind of we hadn't done anything yet, so it's
so exciting.
Everything was new.
It was like proper band stuff, like you said. You know, it was like flying out everywhere, going to this country, or like coming back from, like, you know what I mean? You come back from Japan and then the next week we go into like a Europe tour and stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, we flew in from Australia, we did Kendall Call, and then we had an Enemy cover shoot, you know, that kind of thing.
It was proper.
One
like,
thing just led to another. It was so exciting.
But it felt like proper band stuff. Do you know what I mean? Which is weird, because obviously it took that year for it to be like, fucking hell, this is like our jobs now. Like Charlie said, like mad things you got flying in from Australia doing 3 gigs in one day and then an Enemy shoot. You know what I mean? Things like that where you're just like...
Because you come, like, we always gauged it, the success of how big the gigs were. So we didn't really, like, we weren't that bothered about getting a number one or that bothered about commercial success. Obviously, the labels and stuff want that because, you know, they're putting money into it. Obviously, you'd like it, but it's not the be-all and end-all. Mm. So I think once we saw our gigs, we're already selling out that year, playing the album, or we played the Ritz, we'd already got this confidence to be like, well, we believed in the song, so not arrogant, but we were like, this can't fail. So the fact we got a number one was just like the cherry on the top. If it had got to number three, I wouldn't have cared any less. I wouldn't have made any difference to me that year.
We still don't care now. Do you know what I mean? It's one of them, like, it is, I think when you're a band, all you do care about is life. It's the whole reason you make money. It's amazing to do. And it's like where you get your best reaction. Do you know what I mean? It's where you feel the most.
That's where a lot of our integrity comes from. It's knowing that we can perform live and we can do it well live. That's where it's always come from. And that's so important for a band like us.
Even when we're doing everything, obviously, when we're doing albums and stuff, that is like, obviously, fundamentally, a lot of things we talk about is all to do with live. Mm. Even when you're doing an album, if you're doing it for live, do you know what I mean?
It's weird. Live.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like,
for opener and stuff like that.
100%. I think if you're a band, do you know what I mean? That is the one thing you do have to concentrate on and do have to put like, at the forefront of everything. Like Tom mentioned, do you know what I mean? All the other stuff's mint and great, but inevitably, we were selling out gigs and the crowds were going mad, and that was why.
And James was key in that as well, because he'd seen us play live from being really early on. And obviously, we maybe had a lot of songs which were a bit more mid-tempo, and he'd be like, you need a rocker one. So then when we did it most to Kiss, he'd been saying, you need a song that's like, dun, 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 that kind of thing. And I had the song, and Chaz was like, well, James just kept saying, and then Chaz was like, why don't we do it on this tune? So then
we married the two.
You know, stuff like that where you've been kind of, again, just pushed in a little bit of a direction. And then obviously that became like the opener for a while and a great live track. And, you know, we sped a couple of tunes up on the third. You know, I mean, just little things like that you think about from playing live, which now affect the record.
This is probably a bit of a distraction from the focus of this conversation being on that album. But I guess if the live is that important to you, the last 12 months must have been really difficult as a band.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Just probably the most difficult we've had so far. But obviously, everyone's in the same boat, and you kind of, there was a bigger thing at hand. And, do you know what I mean? We were fortunate enough to be able to, do you know what I mean? We've been sensible with the way we set the band up. So we weren't like living extravagant lifestyles, and we had to like go, oh God, we've got no money and stuff like that. So, you know, if you were a band who just got signed, that would have been worse. But it's been tough to not play because it's what we've done it for so long now.
Yeah, even without all the like, financial issues and stuff, it's like mentally. Yeah,
mentally, it's been hard.
I'm the sort of person, I can't just sit still, do you know what I mean? I can't just do nothing. And obviously, being in the band for as long as you have been, like, and it being your job as well as, like, your hobby, that's all I had at them. Do you know what I mean? So, for it to just go, and that life thing go, and how much I loved it anyway, was just proper difficult. I think you just sit at home and just be like, right. And it was the fear of, when will it come back? And that's what I didn't like about it. But...
You realise other things are like, you live like 100%. You live in a bubble on tour, because every night's a Friday night, so, do you know what I mean? You come off stage, you're drinking. And you come home off that tour, and I just carried on like I was on tour, and I was like getting a bar, where, you know what I mean, getting beer in on a Wednesday night. It's a bit like, well, not everyone's living like this, but it was a weird year, wasn't it?
What, really? It was like, there was upsides and downsides, because most of us had like bought houses and stuff by that point, so even just to spend time at home, that was the longest time I've ever spent at home.
Got a lot of shit done.
Yeah, exactly. Even just spending more than 2 months with my girlfriend, do you know what I mean? Sounds obviously normal, but I've never done that before. I've never had like a time where I'd sat down with my girlfriend every night for more than probably like 8 weeks, do you know what I mean?
Some more often.
I think for her, I think she was one that was like, get the fuck out, I'm sick of you.
Turning attention back to the album slightly, one of the questions I ask people when they come on and do these shows is to pick a moment from the album, and it can be for whatever reason. It might be a highlight, it could be a low light, it could be something you love, something you hate, it could be something that sparks a memory from when you're recording. As I've got four of you, I guess it would be appropriate for you to kind of pick one each. So do you want to pick who goes first, or do you want me to kind of pick someone at random like a teacher?
Just any, like, anything in the process.
If I was at home listening to the album and you said this part of this song is relevant or significant for this reason, what would that be?
I can remember us rehearsing Charlemagne in the scaffolding yard in the room and buzzing off it and playing it over and over again. You know what I mean? Like playing it like 8 times back to back.
We all knew, didn't we? As soon as we like got in that room.
Blown Rose. I remember playing Blown Rose in the rehearsal room, buzzing off. Just little moments like that.
One of mine for me, links to the first album, is getting that phone call about getting signed.
Yeah.
I mean, we was all in the car. And then I was driving and passed. I managed to try to bring you, but it didn't come through or something. Who's bringing me? I remember I passed it on to you, and then you were like, fuck, really? And we were like, what the fuck are you saying? We just sent over Charlemagne to the label, and we were just like, yeah, they want to sign you. And we were just like, fuck, do you know what I mean? Like, and just, I know that we were doing the same drive to the rehearsal room. And
I was going to say, do you remember what road you were on and what you could see at that point? Yeah. Is that ingrained? Like,
near the Big Morrisons in Bradbury.
Going up the hill of football.
Yeah. And we were coming up.
We turned left then. We went past the Mackies.
Exactly, And I just remember like at the traffic lights, that's where you were on the phone to him, but at the traffic lights is where you said, we've been offered a record deal. And we were like, fuck. And I remember going back, getting at the yard, like all of us standing outside the yard, like our old earth rooms, being like, fuck, we've been signed. And I was looking at cars I was going to buy. And obviously, you don't get fucking any money. Do you know what I mean? But in my head, I thought I was going to be like a millionaire or something. But I just remember like the vibe, and everyone, it just felt mint. Do you know what I mean? Because obviously, it'd been like a year of getting almost...
setbacks.
Yeah.
Not much people came to watch us and did sign us, basically.
No one wanted to sign us.
And but I think, in hindsight, we weren't ready. Like that
I'm glad it
nurturing it. Like we were more like that 60s thing than not really modern and kind of didn't really, we didn't have our own identity.
So it worked out well, but at the time it didn't feel like that. It felt horrible.
Felt like no one wants you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it felt like, because it'd been a year where I'd like left my job. I think all of us left our job. Like, and we were all like struggling that way. And we were just a bit like, oh God, like, do you know what I mean? And it was just, not relief, because relief's not the word, because we always thought we would do.
It's like justification.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like we're not mental. Like, we're not mad. Like we're not the only people who believe this is great. And everyone around us and all our families think it's great. Surely someone in that position does. I remember us when we shot the album cover, and it was just meant to be press for the photos. We didn't know it was going to be the album cover, but remember us, because it was that cold, we had hot water bottles in our like down the backs of our jeans, and actually on the front cover of the album we've got hot water bottles down the back of our jeans. So there's stuff like that, and loads of moments in the studio. I remember us working out Honey Sweet and it taking a while, but just buzzing off the vibe of it and being like, this is what I want the band to sound like. And then listening to the, when we get the mixes back in when we're on tour, do you remember that?
Yeah,
in like the van, we just blast it in the van and be like, this is mint.
Met us in a pub in Stockport called the Puss in Boots, which is like a central location to everyone's mum and dad's house.
And we all won it the first time.
Yeah, Jules on, great escape. Then Jules on. And then we sort of got the bus, but all our mums and dads came. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was like a school trip, do you know what I mean? But it was a dead nice moment, do you know what I mean? Because it felt, again,
we always said, oh, when are we going to be on the tour bus?
Yeah, imagine being on the tour bus. And now I hate tour bus.
And then, you know, the cherry on top was getting the number one. I think we were playing Blockbusters in Newquay, weren't we?
Yeah.
When we found out.
On stage.
That was on stage, didn't we? Yeah.
That was mad. Champagne then flying to Romania, like you said. But when you do stuff like this, you talk about it, you actually start remembering it all.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Hi, Mom.
Hiya. You all right?
Yeah,
yeah, I was
doing this interview.
I've got the house to myself, obviously not.
We'll be gone soon. But it was a mad year, that. Fuck them out.
Talk about the final track on the album, because it's Deep Grass, and I'm always curious as to how a band approaches a final track on the album, because Is it a case of it's your least favourite track and you just stick it at the end, or is it like it's like an encore, like a big curtain drop moment where you're finishing in a flourish? How do you approach that when you're putting the album together?
We'd already pretty much boxed off all the singles on the album, so we kind of had a bit more free space. Like, we can do something a bit more loose and just not really overthink it.
I feel like we always do that with every album. The last track, we always like got the singles out of the way. We concentrate on that. And then it's like the last track, we're always like, oh, we can do that on this one. Do you know what I mean?
We had a demo, we can do like
a 7-minute tune. One of the ones
me and Miles done a demo of Deep Grass again. It was like Portishead.
Yeah.
Remember it? So obviously we were like, oh, let's do that Portishead kind of tune.
Yeah.
And we'll just, and then once we started doing it, it had like the big guitar solo at the end, and it went on and on. We were like, it's got to be the last track now. They kind of lend themselves to the position on the album. Well, last tracks always kind of just,
we always know, display themselves.
Being
Deep Grass was just the obvious one to do again. He went a bit mad and stuff, and I just remember Jay sitting down with all these like mad things, like twisting knobs, like a mad scientist. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? To make all these crazy sounds and stuff.
How do you feel about this album now? I've got 7 years on my notes written down, but obviously 5 years on from it being released. Now you've had a bit of time to live with it. Now your sound's changed, I think, over the last 5 years quite significantly. When you take a step back, how do you look at the album? Would you tweak anything? Do you just love it how it is?
I would have worn a better outfit on the cover.
I thought that.
Spray on skinnies, yeah.
I would have worn a better outfit.
Obviously, it's time though, isn't it? We always said we probably would have put Across the More on it.
I wish it did go on. I proper wish that tune were on the album. But
I wouldn't take any tunes off it. No. Nothing that I regret being on it, I don't think.
And obviously, because it went to number one and stuff and did all them things, like, did as well, do you know what I mean? Mm. There was no negative at all, even from doing it, the whole process, everything about it. Like I said, probably the only negative was the song we used to love playing, Across the More, that didn't make it onto it. And Alex Turner said he loved that song as well.
Boys, pleasure to speak to you. I think one of the nice things about hearing from you guys is you just seem to absolutely love doing what you're doing. You all seem like great mates. You seem to buzz off every single aspect of being in a band and making music. And it's really refreshing to hear that. And it's great to revisit what is a classic album. Love doing it on the long player. So thanks very much for joining us.
Cheers, mate.
Nice, Jim.
Thanks a lot.
Nice one.
Bye-bye.
Access Manchester Long Player, an iconic album in full with Jim Salverson. Access Manchester.
That was fun. Enjoyed that. That was my conversation with Blossoms about their debut album from 2016. It's a brilliant album. If listening back to that has inspired you to go back and listen to the album from start to finish, because we don't do that enough, do we? We don't listen to classic albums all the way through. We might pick our favourite songs, but it's one of those albums that just is a joy to experience all the way through again. Go and listen to it. You can find the link in the description of this episode. If you enjoyed it, do rate and review wherever you listen to your podcasts and give some of the other shows in this series a listen too. There'll be a new one every week-ish, give or take, so make sure you're following as well. Click subscribe and you'll get the next episode as soon as it's ready. Have a good one. Cheers for your ears.
The Access Manchester Long Player, an iconic album in full with Jim Salverson. Access Manchester.